I want to join with Jerry in saying we appreciate very much your presence for the Lord's Day morning service. And as he mentioned, we're glad to have Evelyn back with us after having been out for a few days. I also want to mention our directory and a word of thanks to Ronnie Down for doing a fine job on our directory. I have seen a copy of it, and it looks very good, the pictures and all, and he's put in a lot of time getting it read in, even though it isn't quite completed as yet. It will be completed before long, and we want to commend Ronnie for doing a good job on it. Some of you others have helped also, and we appreciate that in getting this new directory ready for distribution here in the congregation. I want to speak for a little while today upon Luke, the 12th chapter, and I call it the rich man and the poor man of Luke 12. Or you might say the poor man and the rich man of Luke 12, either way that you want to give it. Most of the time when I preach on Luke 12, I only mention the rich man. But I got to reading the text the other day, and I thought, well, I don't want to overlook what the Lord said about the poor man here, although I think most preachers have neglected that, and we get down to the rich man of Luke 12, which I plan to talk about also. I'd like to begin reading from Luke, the 12th chapter, beginning with about verse 13. It says, "And one of the company, that is in the company of Jesus," and I don't know exactly who he was, "but said unto him, Master, speak to my brother that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge and a divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not of the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And then he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have no room to where to bestow my fruits? And he said, This will I do, I'll pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul is required of thee, and who shall these things be which thou hast provided?" Here in this context, we have a poor man, at least I believe he was poor, in the first incident which took place, and then we have the story of the rich man. I want to talk about both of them, but I want to start with the first one, the man who said, Master, have my brother to divide his inheritance with me. And Jesus rebuked him and said, Man, who made me a judge or an arbiter over you? And then he gave a warning against covetousness, and that was directed not to a rich man, but to a man who possibly was poor and who wanted some help. And I want to talk about that for just a little bit. You know, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes we think that all rich men are crooks. And sometimes we think all the evil in the world is by rich men, and they're the only ones who can be covetous. But that's really not so. There is no virtue in poverty, nor is there any particular blessing in a person being rich. Money itself has no moral ethics involved in it. It derives its nature from the one who possesses it. It depends on who possesses the money. And so there's no virtue in poverty nor vice in riches as such, although sometimes we think that. I'll admit that there are a number of warnings in the Bible about riches and the fact that a person can be tempted to deviate from the paths of right and rectitude due to money. I'll admit that. As a matter of fact, Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy 6 to warn the ones who are rich and not to trust in uncertain riches. And he says the love of money is the root of all evil. And, of course, I believe that. I have no problem with that. But just to label someone as being evil because they have money is not according to the Bible. Abraham was wealthy, Job was wealthy, and they were both good men. And possibly men in the New Testament, like Philemon, probably was a reasonably rich man. And so just to label someone as being evil because they have money is not in harmony with the teaching will of God. Now, here is a man. He he evidently needed money. He evidently was poor. But his brother had inheritance. Now, normally, this man got inheritance just like his brother because that was the normal procedure in those days. But he obviously had done something with his inheritance. Now, Jesus doesn't say what he'd done with it, and I have no way of knowing that. He might have squandered it in riotous living like the prodigal son. I don't know. He might have wasted its substance, as the Bible said, in riotous living. Or he might have been sick, and he had to spend his money, and therefore he didn't have any, and he coveted his brother's money. But regardless as to why he was in this condition, he wanted his brother to give him money. And he came to the Lord, tried to get the Lord to force him to give him money, and the Lord rebuked him. He said, "Man, who made me a ruler and a divider over you?" And then he spoke these words about covetousness, which meant that was directed to him, that he was a covetous man. And therefore, he was rebuking what I call the poor man, not necessarily the rich man. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, this is taught throughout the teaching of the will of God. In respect to this man, as I said, I don't know why he needed this money, but he thought that he deserved it. He lacked what we commonly call humility. You know, the Apostle Paul said, writing to the Roman brethren, he said, "I'm debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarian, that so much as lieth within me, I'm willing to preach the gospel to you who are at Rome also." Paul said he was debtor. He didn't say the world owed him a living, that the world was in debt to him. He said, "I'm in debt to the world." He said, "I owe the world something to preach the gospel." He said, "That's what I owe you." And I believe the Christian attitude is not that the world owes you a living. As a matter of fact, no one owes you anything because the Bible doesn't teach that. You owe the world something. We live in what a man called the other day the me generation. That a lot of people are brought up with the idea that that the world owes them a living, and they have no reluctance about asking for it, and then they're non-appreciative. They're non-appreciative. We have in this country today what is known as entitlements. An entitlement, the word itself means that you're entitled to something. Well, the truth about the matter is we are entitled to some things. For example, if you pay into Social Security and you pay into it all your life and they take money out of your paycheck and the government takes that money, that's your money. You're entitled to that. That's not something by grace that the government gives you. They took that from you, you see. Now, there are a world of people, though, in the world who haven't put anything in, but they draw a lot out, you see. You know that if you know anything about government and if you know anything about entitlement. And so I'm not saying that anyone who draws these checks from the government that they're selfish and that they're only looking out for themselves and they're too lazy to work. And you know the Bible says if a man will not work, neither shall he eat. But there are a lot of people in this world like this man who think that they deserve something. He thought he deserved his brother's inheritance. Well, on what basis? On what basis? Could he give a reason for it? What did he do with his own inheritance? Now, his brother, by his love and by his grace, could give to him. And if he does that, if he chooses to do that, the man should be appreciative. But a lot of people do not appreciate it. They think they deserve it. And if they think they deserve grace, then they're not going to be grateful for it. I'm going to give you a couple of examples of ingratitude and selfishness, because I think this verse is teaching selfishness. It is teaching covetousness. The Lord was walking down the street one day, and he looked over to his left or right, wherever it was, and he saw a bunch of lepers. There were 10 of them in a pen. They didn't allow lepers to associate with the people. Now, that dreadful disease of leprosy was bad. Catastrophic, really. And they couldn't even associate with the public. And I can just see them as they came up to that fence as the Lord went by. And they said, Lord, have mercy on us. Jesus is going by. Have mercy on us. Look where we are. Look at our condition. Look at this bad condition we're in. And Jesus, as he looked over there, he had compassion on them. And he healed every one of them. All 10 of them. Their leprosy is gone. Jesus walked on down the street. When he got down the street a little ways, one of them came and fell down before him and thanked the Lord for what he'd done. Jesus then raised that important question in your Bible, where are the nine? Where are the nine? What did he mean by it? He meant that only one man of the 10 was appreciative of what he'd done. They thought they deserved it. They were of the me generation. They didn't appreciate grace. They didn't appreciate love. They thought they deserved it. They deserved nothing. Absolutely nothing. God healed them by his love and by his grace. But yet not a one of them came back to thank him. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the fact that his brother maybe should have shared with him his inheritance. But that was up to his brother. But if he had shared it, this man would have probably been like the nine. He would have said, well, I deserved it. I'm not going to thank him. He was supposed to give that to me. I was due that. No, you weren't due it. But we're living in a nation where people think they deserve everything. They deserve nothing. Unless they put something into it. When you receive something and you haven't put anything into it, brother, you have received grace. Our salvation is by grace. We didn't do anything to deserve the Lord to send his only begotten Son down here to live and to die the ignominious death of the cross to give us salvation. That's grace. And we should get on our knees and thank God every day that the Lord was willing to do that. You shouldn't say, well, I deserve that. I deserve salvation. You deserve nothing. Nothing in regard to salvation. It is by the grace of God that you're saved. But the attitude of a lot of people is like this man, and I believe he fell into that category, that he thought he deserved some of his brother's money. One of the most catastrophic things in life today is when you help someone and they don't even turn around to thank you. When they didn't do anything to earn it. They don't have the humility to even thank you for it. Because they think they deserve it. They deserve nothing. That's my point. That's the point of Jesus. That's what the Lord was talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, our salvation is totally by the grace of God. And there might be someone in this life willing to help you. And if they do, you need to be eternally grateful for it. We live in a me generation. America's made up of the me generation. The world owes me everything. I owe them nothing. And that is incorrect. That is incorrect. I can remember little things. I say little things people did for me. And I'm still thankful for it. And I thank them for it. When Maxine and I got married down here at Meridian, Mississippi, we didn't have any money. We didn't even have a car. And I was wanting to go out to Abilene Christian College to enter school and finish some schooling. And I found a man who had a 1936 Ford. He was in the service. And he said he was going to sell it. And I walked down there to see him. He said, yeah, I'm going to sell it. I said, how much you want for it? And he told me. I thought it was a reasonable price. And cars were hard to get hold of then, right after the war. I didn't have enough money. I had about half of it. And we had a brother there named Headley. He was in the lumber business, member of the church. He said by his grace, he would let me borrow $250. And he did. And I was able to pay for the automobile. And to this day, I'm thankful to that man. He didn't owe that to me. He owed me nothing. But by his grace and love, he let me have $250, and I paid him back as soon as I could. And it wasn't long. But the me generation would have said, he owed that to me. He was a brother in Christ. He ought to let me have it. As a matter of fact, he ought to have given it to me. He shouldn't even ask for it back. Because I'm of the me generation. The world owes me a living. I didn't have that attitude and still don't. I believe it's totally incompatible with the will of God. But yet we're living among people that believe that. Here's a man said, Lord, have that man to divide. Give me part of his inheritance. He said, man, who made me a ruler over you and an arbiter? Beware of covetousness. He said, a man's life consisteth not of the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And you know, when the Lord said that, that knocks the bottom out of everything. By the word life, what did he mean by that? He meant that happiness is not predicated on how much money you have. Or the living in this world is not predicated upon money. Some think it is. I have preached the gospel in a lot of rural areas in my life. In many states. Louisiana, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and all over. And I've gone home with a lot of people to eat a meal. I remember down in Louisiana, I went home with a couple, and their house was just, wasn't much of a house, really. But they did their best to prepare a meal. The happiest family I ever saw in my life. They sang together. They prayed together. They loved one another. Therefore, their life did not consist of the abundance of the things which they had. They had very little, but they were happy. But I've been in the homes of some rich folks who were fussing and fighting and very unhappy. A man's life consisteth not of the abundance of the things which he possesseth. That's not where happiness lies. And that's what the Lord said to this man. To this man. And he said, beware of covetousness. Beware of covetousness. Well, one example which I gave was that of the lepers. And only one came back to thank him. I want to give another example. But it's, in a sense, the opposite. It's the right one. Over in Luke here, about 15, a little later on, there's a story of the prodigal son. The prodigal son was of the me generation at first, but he changed his mind. And that's good. He came to his father and said, give me my inheritance. And obviously he wanted to spend it in riotous living. And so he went into a far country, as you know the story, and he spent it in riotous living. And his brother said he lived among prostitutes. And he probably did. He spent every dime he had because he thought his father owed that to him. He thought he deserved it. But he got broke. Wound up in the hog pen, eating with the hogs. And the Bible said he came to himself. And that's good. He changed his mind. He became humble. He had a different attitude. He went back home on that long journey home. And he walked. And I suppose it took him a long time to get home. Probably lost a lot of weight because he didn't have anything to eat. But he learned his lesson the hard way. He learned that he shouldn't be of the me generation. That the world didn't owe him anything. So when he got home, what did he say? He said, Dad, you owed me that, and now I've come home and you owe me to kill the fatted calf. I want you to go out there and kill it. I deserve all of that. He said, I don't even deserve to be called your son. Now that's the right attitude. Now you're getting to the right attitude. We talked about a bad attitude. The nine that didn't even come back and thank the Lord. They didn't even come back. They weren't even thankful. Ingratitude is one of the sins and the greatest curses of this age. Ingratitude. And it's prevalent sometimes in the church of the Lord. People are not thankful for their blessing. They're not thankful for what other people do for them. When this prodigal son returned home, he changed his mind. He said, Father, I'm not even worthy to be called your son, but your servant. Now that's humility. That is the right attitude. And he said, I deserve nothing. I deserve nothing. But if by your grace you'll take care of me, that's good, and I'll be grateful for it. But I don't deserve it. That is the Christian attitude. That is the Bible attitude. Not, I deserve everything. I deserve everything. You deserve nothing. Paul said, I am debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarian, to the wise and the unwise, that so much as lieth unto me, I'm willing to preach the gospel to you who are at Rome. Paul felt that he owed the world something. So do you. You owe it to them to teach them and to help them as much as you possibly can. You're in debt. I'm in debt. We are all debtors. And so when that prodigal son got home, he changed his attitude. And he had the fine Christian attitude. He didn't have it when he left home, but bless your life, he changed. Someone said, well, he learned his lesson the hard way. That is true. I'll admit that. And sometimes we learn things the hard way. And if we take it properly, it's good for us when we learn those things. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to talk about not only the rich man of Luke 12, I want to talk about the poor man of Luke 12. The man who coveted his brother's inheritance, who was unthankful, who was an ingrate, but he thought he deserved it. And he wanted to use Jesus to force that man, force his brother to give him that money. Because he probably thought within himself, Lord, I deserve it. He deserved nothing. Now, if his brother wanted to share with him, that would be his business. But like the prodigal son, he should have been eternally grateful. And he should tell his brother, brother, I didn't deserve this, but I do appreciate your help. And I want to thank you for it. I want to thank you. But many people don't do that. Not today, because they're of the me generation. It's me and mine, and that's it. That's all. That's all they think about. And that's why I want to preach this lesson, because that's in the text. That's what he's talking about. Now, the second man that the Lord talks about here is a rich man. And he had a bad attitude. But not all rich men have that. He said there was a certain... It's a parable. A parable is a prolonged metaphor. And he said there was a certain rich man. And he said his crops brought forth bountifully. Well, you know, I gather from this he was rich even before he had that great crop production there, that his farm brought forth a lot of goods. The way it's read. Now, some say, well, no, I think he became rich as a result of that. Well, that could be true, but the way it reads is that he might have been rich before he had all this crop coming in. But he really made a killer crop. And he said within himself, what'll I do? I've made so much, I don't even know where to put it. Well, he said, I can pull down my barns and build greater ones, and I'll store all this goods up, and I've got it made. I've got it made. And I'm just going to rear back on my dignity, and I'm just going to say to my soul, soul, eat, drink, and be merry, for you have much goods laid up for many, many years. In other words, I'm just going to quit and take your life easy. That's what he said. In the rocking chair. I'm just going to quit. And then the Lord spoke to him and said, thou fool. Called him a fool. This night thy soul is required of thee, and who shall these things be? What things? Well, money and crops and material things, and houses and lands and whatever else. The things there would include not only money, but material things. And the acquisition of those things seems to be the aspiration of a lot of people, and they feel that the more that they can acquire, the better off they are. I was watching this show on television last night, and he was talking about Las Vegas. And some fella came over here, and he couldn't even speak English. And he went out there, and he got to playing the racket of gambling, and he was real good at it. Not many are, as the man said. Most of them lose money out there, and they lose their shirt. But this man, some way, he either got lucky or he was good. He made $28 million. And one man walked up to him and said, "Why are you continuing to gamble out here? You've got $28 million." He said, "Well," he said, "I just don't want to quit." He said, and he did. And then the story was he lost the $28 million finally. But he'd gotten up. He made $28 million out of Las Vegas. But according to the report, which I was watching, he lost it. And the man who was talking says, a few people out there are able to maneuver around. They're smart enough. They do make a little money. But he said 99% of them lose, which of course is true. They lose, and that's how Las Vegas can build all those hotels and things out there. They're making money off the public. But the people are foolish enough, some of them, to think they're going to get rich by going to Las Vegas. Well, most of them wind up with nothing. That's how most of them wind up. But anyway, my point is, in regard to this, is that here we have in the Bible this rich man. And the Lord called him a fool. Now, the question is, why was he a fool? Why was he a fool? He was called a fool, but why? Why? Well, one is he left God out of his life. Someone said, well, he's a fool because he's rich and because his crops made good. No, that is not why he's a fool. Someone said, well, he's a rich man. I know, but that's not why he was a fool. There wasn't anything wrong with him making a good crop. There wasn't anything wrong with him even storing his goods up. It was his attitude. His attitude. You see, money derives its character from the person who owns it. Money itself is neither good nor bad. It's neither good nor bad. But he was a fool because he left God out of his life. He never did pray to God. He never did thank God. He didn't have any spiritualism. He thought it was all materialism. And he died. And the Lord said, there's no pockets in a shroud, or at least the same thing as that. He left it all here. And the Lord said he was a fool. Now, there were other reasons. I don't have time to go into them today, but one of them was he left God. You cannot leave God out of your life and be successful. You may think you can, but when you leave it out, you're a fool to leave God out of your life. Someone says, well, preacher, what do you mean by that? Do you mean that I don't believe in God? No, you might claim to believe in God, but you still leave him out of your life. There are people in Prentice County, if you ask them, do you believe in God? They say, oh, yeah, I believe in God. They might even say they believe Jesus Christ, Son of God. But they never go to church. They never pray. They never spread the gospel. They never do anything that's spiritual. Brother, they've left God out of their lives. But someone says they believed in God. This man might have believed in God. I suspect he did. But he still left God out of his life. You leave God out of your life when you leave the church out of your life, because it's the bride of Christ. When you never go to church, when you never serve God, you never observe the Lord's Supper, you're leaving God out of your life. You may believe in Him, or claim to, but you've left Him out when you don't do what He says. And that's what this man did. And that's one of the reasons he was a fool. And anyone who leaves God out of his life, my friends, is playing with his own soul. If you're here today and subject to the invitation, we hope you'll come and obey the gospel of the Lord and not leave the Lord out of your life, but not make the mistake of this rich man. So if you're here and subject, we hope you'll come and obey the gospel. Shall we stand and sing our invitation song? It's